Sauron disguised himself in the Second Age as Annatar, the Lord of Gifts. But who did he claim Annatar was, and how did he get away with it? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover Tolkien's Legendarium in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Sauron's plan to forge the Rings of Power with Celebrimbor and the Elves of Eregion, then control the Ringbearers through the One Ring, depended on him going undetected in Eregion for hundreds of years disguised as Annatar. But how did he manage that? How did no one suspect him? Well, some did, and we'll come on to that in a second, but let's remind ourselves of the background first, because Sauron, by name, was one of the most famous people in Middle-earth, among the elves, at least, during the Second Age. He had been Morgoth's right-hand man through the wars of the First Age, and gained a fearsome reputation then. Although appearing to repent briefly after Morgoth's defeat, he didn't hand himself over to the Valar for judgment, and instead hid himself in Middle-earth. He took his time, but slowly returned to his old ways, now confident that he was the best and only person who could bring order to Middle-earth after, as he saw it, the Valar had abandoned the land. He started gathering allies and followers in the east, in Rûn, from around the year 500, based himself in Mordor from around the year 1000, and started building the massive Dark Tower of Barad-dûr around then. This was all in secret, so no one knew it was Sauron, but wise old Gil-galad sensed the shadow rising and wrote to his friends in Numenor to warn them of it. The wise knew something was up, but not what or who. At which point, Sauron launched his plan to control the elves. This is what we read in the Silmarillion. He went far and wide, and his hue was still that of one both fair and wise. Only to Lindon he did not come, for Gil-galad and Elrond doubted him and his fair seeming, and though they knew not who in truth he was, they would not admit him to that land. But elsewhere the elves received him gladly, and few among them hearkened to the messengers from Lindon bidding them beware, for Sauron took to himself the name of Annatar, the Lord of Gifts, and they had at first much profit from his friendship. So Sauron, as Annatar, wandered the land, visiting elves wherever he was welcomed. And to be clear, there were a lot more elves in Middle-earth in those days. Lindon, Eregion, Lorien, and Greenwood, to name just a few sizable communities. Gil-galad and Elrond in Lindon may have doubted him and tried to persuade others not to welcome him, but they didn't know who he really was, so their suspicions must have seemed a little tinfoil, given that Annatar came across really well and was offering knowledge and wisdom without seeming to ask for anything in return. We should probably note at this point that Sauron was really good at disguises at this point. Maia, like him, are spiritual beings, so can take on a variety of different physical forms, but Sauron seems to be particularly talented at it. There's a memorable episode in the First Age where he rapidly shifts from his own normal form to that of a giant werewolf, to a serpent, and finally to a vampire in quick succession. But I digress. The point here is that if Sauron disguised himself as a fair-seeming being and acted in that way, then not even the wisest in Middle-earth would be able to see through the disguise. They might have their suspicions, but they wouldn't know who Annatar really was. So what did Annatar look like? Who did the elves think he was? Well, Tolkien uses various versions of the term fair-seeming to describe him, which suggests that he looked good, and not just nice to the eye, but charming and generous, knowledgeable, and the kind of person you wanted to have around. In the chapter in Unfinished Tales about Galadriel and Celeborn, we get this extra detail from Christopher Tolkien, taken from his father's notes. In Eregion, Sauron posed as an emissary of the Valar, sent by them to Middle-earth, thus anticipating the Istari, or ordered by them to remain there to give aid to the elves. So the elves of Eregion took Annatar to be a Maia, as he was, but one sent by the Valar to help them. In other words, he was posing as a kind of Gandalf figure, millennia before Gandalf and the other Istari were sent by the Valar to help the Free Peoples against Sauron. And it was in Eregion that Sauron, as Annatar, had the greatest success. To understand why, we just need to go back to why those elves were there in the first place. After the First Age, most of the Noldor elves of Middle-earth were based on the west coast at Lindon, but Celebrimbor, already a famed craftsman with impeccable heritage, headed east with some compatriots to form a new community next to the Misty Mountains, drawn by the rumour of Mithril. He and they struck up a friendship and trading relationship with the dwarves of Khazad-dûm, which soon started producing some of the most beautiful crafted items ever in Middle-earth. Sauron, ever the smith himself, seems to have focused his attention there. We read on. It was in Eregion that the counsels of Sauron were most gladly received, for in that land the Noldor desired ever to increase the skill and subtlety of their works. Moreover, they were not at peace in their hearts, since they had refused to return into the West, and they desired both to stay in Middle-earth, which indeed they loved, and yet to enjoy the bliss of those that had departed. Therefore, they hearkened to Sauron, and they learned of him many things, for his knowledge was great. So here we get the second reason why Sauron got away with disguising himself as Annatar for so long. The first was that he was convincing. The second, that he offered the smiths of Eregion what they eagerly desired, knowledge and expertise to improve their craftsmanship, in particular, to help them craft things that would allow them to live in Middle-earth as they wanted, without sacrificing the blissful benefits of the Undying Lands that they had turned their back on. And to unpack that a bit more, at the end of the First Age, all of the elves were given another invite by the Valar to go west to the Undying Lands that were a better fit for them. The immortal elves were always slightly unsuited to Middle-earth with its annual cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, and generation after generation of humans and the like who were born and aged and died while the elves barely changed. The elves under Celebrimbor wanted to stay in Middle-earth and make it work better for them through artificial means, by preserving it in some way, so slow down the aging and decay. As Tolkien put it in one of his letters, they wanted to have their cake and eat it. Sauron, as Annatar, offered to give them that. And Celebrimbor also had a weak spot that Sauron could exploit. He was the grandson of the legendary Feanor, the greatest elven smith ever. The man who had made the Silmarils, whose fate dominated the First Age, and the Silmarillion itself was named after. Celebrimbor ever lived in his grandfather's shadow. He wanted to escape it by crafting something just as great himself. Annatar offered him just that opportunity. One intriguing side note to all this is that at that time Galadriel and her husband Celeborn were based in Eregion, very much the power couple, and Galadriel, like Gil-galad and Elrond, was suspicious but couldn't put a finger on exactly who Annatar might be. We read this. Sauron perceived at once that Galadriel would be his chief adversary and obstacle, and he endeavoured, therefore, to placate her, bearing her scorn with outward patience and courtesy. No explanation is offered in this rapid outline of why Galadriel scorned Sauron, unless she saw through his disguise, or of why, if she did perceive his true nature, she permitted him to remain in Eregion. So great became his hold on the Mirrodin that at length he persuaded them to revolt against Galadriel and Celeborn and to seize power in Eregion, and that was at some time between 1350 and 1400 of the Second Age. Galadriel therefore left Eregion and passed through Khazad-dûm to Lorinand, taking with her Amroth and Celebrian. We get another bit of clarification in a footnote where Christopher Tolkien says he found an, and I quote, isolated and undateable note from his father, suggesting that Galadriel might not have believed Annatar because she remembered being in Valinor and couldn't remember Annatar being there with Aula the Smith, as he claimed, which makes some sense. Incidentally, if you've not come across this before, this is quite a feature of deeper investigations into Tolkien lore. Tolkien wrote lots of information about the history of his legendarium, but changed his mind on things often and frequently wrote random half-finished thoughts on scraps of paper or in the margins of other random thoughts. Christopher Tolkien's editorial work to pull it all together really was worthy of all the praise it received. Anyway, it seems that Galadriel was another of those who didn't trust Annatar from the start. Though here we get another nuance, in that we learned that she scorned him, and he responded with patience and courtesy. Another reminder that the Galadriel we see at the end of the Third Age is not the same Galadriel we see earlier on in her history. At the very least, Sauron here outsmarted her and turned the elves of Eregion against her. At worst, she scorned him, and he was kind and patient to her, and they sided with who seemed the better person. So Annatar won the trust of the elves of Eregion because his disguise was good, he offered them what they wanted, and perhaps he was even, dare we say it, for a short time, acting like a better person than the elves who were suspicious of him. All that, of course, changed when he snuck back to Mordor and forged the One Ring. Then the elves understood what was going on and took off their rings and opposed Sauron completely. But by then, all pretense of being Annatar had gone for Sauron. Before you knew it, he was back invading innocent people once more. His ruse pretending to be Annatar, the Lord of Gifts, had been successful. He could probably have carried on for much longer if he'd wanted to, but the desire to rule all overcame him, and he couldn't resist heading back to Mordor to absolutely control all those people he had already bent to his will. And as a final thought, my mind does go back to that moment in The Lord of the Rings where Frodo decides to trust Aragorn. This is what he says. "You have frightened me several times tonight, but never in the way that servants of the enemy would, or so I imagine. I think one of his spies would, well, seem fairer and feel fouler, if you understand." I think Frodo nailed it, because the exact opposite was true of Sauron when he was posing as Annatar. He seemed fair, but as the wise, like Gil-galad, Elrond and Galadriel noted, he felt fouler, even if they couldn't say who he was or exactly why they suspected him. Despite his fair form or gifts or honeyed words, there was something evil in him. If only Mor had listened to them. If you'd like to see more videos like this, digging into the deeper layers of Tolkien's Legendarium, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. The best way to do that is by clicking the link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.